Hello everyone, sorry for starting late. I wanted to fix this TV forever and I did it. So now it's not relying on the Wi-Fi anymore. Too frustrating because I never think about the TV until 10 minutes before the show. And now it's been 3 days that the Wi-Fi network, it was disconnected. Something is not working. So Mama JF, by cleaning the house, had found a couple of days ago a bag of USB sticks, so that gave me a free USB stick, and that allowed me to try, what if I put, instead of relying on the Wi-Fi network to play the video in the background, what if I put it on a USB stick, and then I had to, because this TV is kind of embedded, as you see, in some kind of a contraption, so it's hard to access, and I was like, where is the freaking USB slot on this TV? I didn't know. And I had actually, I had ordered those extended mirrors. You know, it's a mirror at the end and you can extend a long stick. That's for my checkups of Ukrainian bombs under my car. Anyways, that's another story. But I was able to extend behind the... behind the TV so I could see with a mirror where is the USB slot of this TV, and this allowed me to connect a USB stick with the video, so now I will always have a background that works no matter if the network is down or whatever. Who knew that my little extended mirror that I bought for bomb verifications, because one of my friends, Alexander Dugin, was targeted for a bomb assassination, ended up killing his daughter. So I had to equip myself with some stuff, and someone in the crowd recommended. I had my own mirror that I was able to use in that way, but someone recommended to buy the professional bomb checking mirrors, and I bought them from Amazon. They are beautiful. I didn't bring them for the camera, but they are, it's a little rectangle with a rotating mirror, so you can put it at whatever angle you want, and then you can scan anything that is out of reach. Today we will be we will be talking about the debate that happened between Mark Collett and Greg Johnson, an excellent debate. I think Mark Collett performed extremely well. Very proud of him. And I'm not saying this just because I'm going on his show very soon. I think he totally destroyed Greg Johnson. And Greg Johnson came with something that looked like a decent position, but it was only in the surface. If you probed it with a test and with what do you have to accept in terms of double standard to accept this, pro-Ukraine view, you realize that there's a lot of logical leaps. There's a lot of treating basically the Russians the way Hillary Clinton does, which is whatever they do is the absolute evil. Whatever is their position, we take the anti-position. And it's not a subject in which I find the argument very compelling. This whole idea of a war of whites against white, because this you can make it both ways. This argument you can say, oh well, Russia is making a war against a white nationalist country, and then you can do like Greg Johnson, which is to highlight, well, there was a movement of racial unity in Ukraine, there was some kind of neo-Nazi battalions. But then you can examine the whole behavior of Ukraine toward the ethnic Russians from 2014 to now, and you can see that Ukraine is as guilty and more guilty, in fact, than Russia to have made life horrible for a bunch of white people in their country. So the whole axis of whiteness is not a very interesting lens to look at it through, because okay, well, you're focusing on the white people that Russia is attacking, but Ukraine was attacking white people too before they started being attacked by Russia. They were oppressing a bunch of people in the East and the South to basically expand the American Empire's control of that region. DK Shadow says, you shouldn't talk about your security procedures, Jeff. Now they know what not to do. I'm keeping so many secrets. I'm keeping enough secrets to feel comfortable. That is actually, that is something I had already talked about, the mirror thing, and it's half joke in terms of everything I do to stay safe. It's 1%. Shrigalum says, JF, still the best, most intellectually honest and best show on the internet. Well, thank you so much for the compliment. A couple of review of important news and stuff. Before we get to the review of the debate, I will not review the 2 hours length full, but perhaps the first 45 minutes or wherever we can get in time are very interesting. All right. Someone sent me this video, and he says in an email, hello, JF. 3 things you should never say. Can you check out the first 3 minutes of this video and give your thoughts? I hear you say these things, and I think he makes a good point. But I'm guessing you'll say it's not a big deal. If this is the case, I just want to know why. I will be blah, blah, blah. I would like to hear your thoughts on the show. But not if you think it's stupid and not worth mentioning. Anyways, I don't expect anything. Just want to say, keep up the good work and have a nice life. So basically, there's this guy suggesting to never say 3 things. So let's see what he has to say.
I'm talking about debate. Basically, a hardcore discussion. You never ever say, I think, whatever, whatever. I feel, or I believe. If you forever erase those from your vocabulary, you will get a lot farther. Those are...
Okay, so I don't think it's ridiculous. I think it's a sensical counsel there. It makes some sense. However, there are certain situations where you want to use these words. Now, you say you hear me use these words, I think it's very rare that I use these words in any place that matters. In fact, I kind of intentionally use these words sarcastically sometimes. In response to someone who talks very much about their feelings, sometimes I'll say a joke and I'll say, well, I feel that. But it's very rare that you'll hear me say, I feel. Maybe there's a compilation of clips out there that someone could do and I'd be surprised. I don't remember using much I feel. I think and I believe this is necessary in the live streaming world. And yes, he's right. You shouldn't, your argument in a debate shouldn't be built around these words. However, these words are extremely important when you are live streaming, talking about news, and then someone talks to you about something in the chat and you're not quite sure. It's not something you had prepared. It's not a news you're familiar with. You haven't done all the verifications. And then the I believe and I think are necessary. They are precisely there to mark, look, don't quote me on this. I'm not reporting this as truth, but those are my beliefs if what you say is true. So, he's maybe a little too extreme in his way to phrase it. It's not that you have to get rid of these words from your entire vocabulary, but you have to be very careful about these words. He's right. And if you're in an intro that you've pre-written or you are in a debate that is structured, these words shouldn't be there. They should appear maybe at the end, when there's an open discussion and you get surprised on a point, and then you may be like, oh, well, I'm not sure about what you're talking about, but I think that, and that's it. You shouldn't be building on those words. You should just be using those words when they are the right words to use. Someone was sharing NVIDIA explanations of what ray tracing is. I didn't know at all about this. Apparently, One of the big evolution in video cards is ray tracing in the last decade. And basically the problem they were facing is when you generate a 3D world, much of the natural feeling that you can get from a well-generated 3D world, when you feel it's real and beautiful, it's because they do a lot of ray bouncing. So they send light, virtual light, into their virtual space, and then they see it bounce on the wall, and then it gets absorbed in white. If the wall is white, it reflects white, it absorbs the other color, and then this ray of light that is now white bounces on your object, creates a shadow. All of this subtlety is obtained by actually shooting virtual rays of light and finding out what the outcome is. And that's a big problem. One of the big problems is it takes a lot of time because you have to send millions of rays of light. And if you don't take this time, if you don't take those 3 weeks to truly model the rays as they bounce inside your room, then you're limited in real time to only a few rays of light. And that leads to granular vision. Like, okay, the computer knows that it's that bright here, but it doesn't quite know what to do here, doesn't quite know what to do here. You would need more rays of light being bounced. Now, the solution that NVIDIA brought and is described by this
image.
Video.
Now, your task is to finish it. Do you know what this depicts? Maybe. But knowing all the details, this one does some serious legwork with this noisy denoising egg blows my mind. We are now one step closer.
So that's the difference here. The new technology, where your ray of light would have given you just some information about the 3D space, the ray tracing allows to reconstruct a beautiful 3D space as if you had bounced light everywhere. And basically the key to the algorithm seems to be keeping note of where you've illuminated and use that knowledge to gain in the next iteration. Because if you just move the camera a little bit, the old algorithm was restarting the whole retracing experiment. And the new technology basically keeps a memory and says, oh, well, I bounced light right there. I was just a couple of theta angles away from that position. Therefore, it should be relatively the same. So it keeps note of what are those crucial rays of light that I can send in that particular 3D scene so that I can get the best image from it. Now, Nighttime Edition says, bro, ray tracing is 2019 news. I get it. I'm not saying that this is new. I'm saying I didn't know about this. And it's very interesting that this is what basically makes the difference between today's beautiful natural illustrations and 5-7 years ago. Very interesting. And before we commence the review of the debate by Mark Collett and Greg Johnson, a big event happening is the interview that Kanye gave to Revolt.tv, Drink Champs. I don't know exactly what that is, but they seem to be there for, what is it, 9 hours in a row? I mean, I see Ye Part 3, exclusive preview. Was there a Part 2, Part 1? I haven't watched the whole thing. I watched segments of it at this point. Maybe I'll do a full commentary tomorrow. But guys, you know, someone who was a listener, a big fan of the show years ago, sent me a Discord DM about this interview and said, I cannot believe that this is real. I cannot believe that this is happening in reality. Basically, you have Kanye here discussing, chilling in a podcast of themes that we've been trying to push back in 2016, 2017, and questioning his relationship with Jewish power, Jewish supremacy, and being very open about it. That is very interesting. It is a mainstreaming of talking points that I tried to engage in back years ago. and that people will reject you for this. They will put you on it list. They will smear you. But I think it's getting out, and it's inevitable that the honesty with which we have engaged with these questions in the past will eventually be recuperated by mainstream figures like Kanye. And all of this not to create hate or to develop a hateful society, but all of this to question fairly. Like, if you're in a society that keeps saying white privilege is great and white people control everything, can we begin asking the question, is it normal that the mediatic industry, that other industries are, and the military industrial complex appear, and some pharmaceutical that have engaged in vaccine making, is it normal that so much of these fields are controlled by powerful Jewish people? I mean, it's a legitimate question, especially when basically the white race gets all of it on it. When the left starts criticizing profit and control, they have all eyes for the white race. But somehow they have this blind spot. They don't want to engage on the question of, hey, if power is a problem, could we question in this society Jewish power and Israeli influence on military interventions of the U.S. and engagement in war. Even Donald Trump. That's just to tell you that some people today were feeling we are in a breach of the time-space continuum. Even Donald Trump is talking about Jews today. No president has done more for Israel than I have. Somewhat surprisingly, however, our wonderful evangelicals are far more appreciative of this than the people of the Jewish faith, especially those living in the U.S. Those living in Israel, though, are a different story. Highest approval rating in the world, could easily be prime minister. U.S. Jews have to get their act together and appreciate what they have in Israel before it is too late. That's basically Donald Trump. Yeah, he's always annoying when he says these things. Like, I've done so much for Israel. Like, I'm so good. But put this aside, he's calling out the fact that the Jewish people of America have not been reciprocating toward him. He's saying, look, guys, I helped you so much. And you have this beautiful place, Israel, and I've helped it so much. It's a beautiful place, and you treat me like shit. So that's a little bit the Kanye expression also, where Kanye in the interview says that his family was destroyed by the Jewish mediatic complex, something having to do with Kim Kardashian having sex beside a fireplace while being a mother of four with Kanye, but having sex with some guy. I don't understand exactly what he was referring to, but basically says in the interview, by creating this culture of sex tape and, oh, look at this revelation, that basically the Jewish media has been ruining his family. And here you have Donald Trump saying, look, you guys have not been fair to me. I've been trying to give you as much as I could, as much as any president gave you before, and you treat me like shit. So is there a time for at which these people, like Donald Trump, realize I'm not going to keep giving to a community that treats me like shit, just like Elon Musk? I'm not going to, and I'm not saying that he's gonna cut it because it seems that he's backing out, but how can you be offering cell phone service to the front of the proxy war of the US against Russia while this very country that you're helping fight Russia is insulting you and telling you to fuck off with your peace deals? At some point, you have to realize they're never going to reciprocate. And that time has to be the time where you stop giving any help, any care, anything. But we're not there. We're not there. We are still in the age of cockery. DK Shadow says they have cultivated a culture of exhibitionism. That seems to be the statement of Kanye West. So I'll be watching the whole thing tonight, but I didn't have time to watch it in full today. Naberius says, the blood sports era made waves. Fun to imagine big public figures watching certain clips. Exactly. I take full credit. I don't want to... Not full credit, because the blood sport era was a collective contribution by so many people. But I take part of the credit to have led to a culture that today is penetrating the mainstream. Now, there is something dirty about this, because ultimately what's going to happen is all of our talking points are being parasitized by people who don't truly believe in them, but they carry it because they have no choice. And there's something dirty about it, that, you know, we got censored, we got attacked, we got totally, we got put in the mud and carried by a pickup truck, chained to a pickup truck and dragged in the mud. But eventually there are mainstream figures who will have to adopt these talking points because they relate to a reality that at some point no one can deny. Let's get into the debate of Mark Collett and Greg Johnson. I'll play it at 1.5x. I'm sorry for those who have... will not enjoy it because of this, but it's a very long debate, and I'd like to be able to review it in less than 5 hours, you know, so let's get going. On the other hand, you'll have the JF boys at the zero, at the 1x.
Okay, we are live. Welcome to the debate, Greg Johnson versus Mark Collett. Today we will be debating, well, Mark and Greg will be debating the issue of Ukraine and Russia and what perspective nationalists should take in the Anglosphere. Anyway, so...
I've just achieved victory. That's it.
Oh, he just disappeared. Time limits. I will cut you off if you kind of go.
All right. And before we start, if you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below.
Go over the time limit, so that will be enforced. And as well as Super Chats, if people want to ask questions at the end, I don't know if Greg and Mark will hang around, but some other friends might come on afterwards if they don't anyway. We'll kind of break down the debate. So open invitation to the both of you to hang around afterwards. But no, it's fine if you guys need to go. Now, I believe... And the link to the Super Chat is in the description. Entropy Tree stream, there's a link in the description if you want to send one in. So anyway, so let's get into it. So Greg, you wanted to go first, so I'll start your timer now.
Okay, I want to thank you, Joel, for hosting and moderating, and also Mark for joining me in what I want to build as a civil airing of differences on the Ukraine war. The first question we need to ask is, why are white nationalists commenting on this war in the first place? I am under no illusions that my opinions on this war, one way or another, will have any effect whatsoever on the outcomes. So why talk about it at all? Because
this is a weak point, because you're not going to have impacts on anything you talk about. You don't have impacts on the ethnic constitution of the US. You don't have impacts when you talk of US politics. So we know we have zero impact on anything. As far as we can tell, the system is equipped to continue in its direction no matter what we say on YouTube. And that's just a feature of the system. So the reason we should talk about the Ukraine war is that it's a subject of importance civilizationally, and it's important even if you don't change the war situation. It's important to talk about it so that people realize their place in it, because you could have this war and it would be like any other war of the Middle East, and you'd be like, I don't occupy a position with respect to it. my country is just at war and I don't know why. Or you can know your role. You can know that this war is about the line of progression between the West and the East. And it's about just how much of the Western Empire will, how much of the earth will the Western Empire cover? How much nations, how many nations are we going to subordinate to American political, geopolitical priors? And by American, I mean exactly what Mark Collette means when he says the Judeo-American empire, which is basically an American-based empire, but unfortunately controlled largely by Israeli interests.
Even if my commentary will have no short-term effect on the war, I'm playing a much longer game. I'm an advocate for white nationalism. As I define it, white nationalism is a species of ethno-nationalism, the view that the best world order consists of sovereign states for all peoples who aspire to them. Ethno-nationalism is the best global order for two principal reasons. First, it respects the differences between peoples and races and secures their own spaces in which they can live according to their own identities and develop as they will. Second, multiracial, multicultural empires are cauldrons of ethnic strife and hatred and the erasure of identity. By separating warring tribes into their own homelands, ethno-nationalism promotes peace. Now, ethno-nationalism is opposed to imperialism in all its forms. Imperialism is a form of multiculturalism in which different peoples are subject to a single political order, which again encourages hatred, conflicts, and cultural destruction.
Now, I could agree theoretically here with the point, but when you superimpose these principles onto the Ukraine situation, you have a problem, which is Ukraine is itself a multicultural empire of some kind. Ukraine has been oppressing imperialistically the Donbass. Ukraine represents a puppet regime of the US, which is itself an imperial force. So it's like Greg is headed toward basically putting all of these bad labels onto Russia. But the fact is, these labels apply just as much to Ukraine. In fact, as Mark Collette will beautifully say, there is no more imperialistic forces than the Judeo-American regime. That is the biggest imperialist force on the planet. In fact, to a certain extent, almost the only one, to the extent that if you do dominate a nation by force, it will be either because this American empire doesn't care about you, doesn't care enough to stop you from doing it, or that you'll beat that this very American empire, which no nation can do right now.
So ethno-nationalists, however, do not oppose trade and cooperation and amity between sovereign states, including the creation of things like customs unions to facilitate commerce or defensive pacts against aggression. Now, the main reason I comment on the Ukraine war is to show the relevance of white ethno-nationalist ideas. Russia is the world's largest land empire, and it used to be much larger, embracing Finland, the Baltic states, Poland, Belarus, Ukraine, Moldova, the Caucasus, the Central Asian stands, and after the Second World War, it ruled the Warsaw Pact nations as well. Now, after the collapse of communism, these nations gained their independence. Now, post-communist Russia is an obscenely rapacious oligarchy, ruled largely by former communists, including state security spooks like Vladimir Putin.
Now, what about you apply these questions to Ukraine? What is Ukraine? Ukraine is a highly corrupted regime in which when they didn't like what the democratic regime had chosen, they ousted their own president, replaced him with a regime more sympathetic to Europe and America. And that was the 2014 events with Yanukovych leading to his ousting. So if you want to talk corruption, let's talk about Ukraine. So you're talking about two countries, anyways, that are corrupt oligarchies. We know this. It's not going to be a moral solution to the question because two wrongs don't make a right, because the wrongs cancel each other and you get nothing left. You have to analyze it from the perspective of what would be good in a corrupt Russian Ukraine or what would be good with a corrupt American Ukraine? That is the question.
They tyrannize over a profoundly degraded populace with astonishingly high rates of alcoholism, drug abuse, divorce, abortion, HIV infection, and domestic violence. Imagine an America where outside of New York and Los Angeles, everything else consists of West Virginia and Indian reservations, and you get a sense of what the Russian Federation today is like. Now, Russia's ruling elite...
White Zealot says, does imperialism necessarily require multiple races living under the same government? If you wipe out the inhabitants of the lands you conquer, is it still imperialism? Yes, I would define it as imperialism, just more genocidal imperialism. But yeah, imperialism can be enacted in two ways, either an attempt at control other nations, that's pretty much what America has been doing, or an attempt at replacing other nations, which is how, to a certain extent, traditional war was being fought in terms of invading lands and taking over the lands with your ethnic.
It openly mourns the collapse of the Soviet Empire and dreams of putting it back together. Russia fought two bloody wars against the Chechens to prevent them from gaining their independence. Russia uses ethnic Russian minorities in neighboring states as fifth columnists and pretexts for interventions. They have fomented riots in the Baltic states. They have fomented secession.
The thing is it, what is a pretext? And what if the pretext is real? Is that then a good reason? The fact is the people of the Donbass were being oppressed, killed, treated unfairly by the Ukrainian government. Call it a pretext, if you will, it doesn't change that it was happening. And therefore, there is a just outcome for them in seeing a nation come to their rescue. Well, you can put the label pretext on something, but it doesn't make it invalid.
...and irredentist wars in the Caucasus, Moldova, and Ukraine. About the only former imperial possession Russia has not meddled in is Belarus, which is a wholly subservient satellite state. Now, after the collapse of communism, Ukraine had a referendum on independence. Every single region voted for independence from Moscow. In 1994, Russia and the United States were parties to the Budapest Accord, which recognized Ukraine's 1991 borders in exchange for nuclear disarmament. Despite this, Russia has worked for decades to turn Ukraine into a Belarus-style satellite. Ukraine overwhelmingly favored pursuing EU membership. In 2013, Russia tried to prevent this with economic sanctions. Then Putin basically...
That is quite a ridiculous interpretation of what happened. Yanukovych was the duly elected president of Ukraine. Yanukovych was faced with a choice. He negotiated with two entities. On the one hand, the European Union. And it is not true that the vast majority of Ukraine wanted to join the European Union. There was some support for joining the European Union, and there was some support for an economic relationship with Russia. Yanukovych, being presented with two offers, ended up finding that the Russian offer was better. And it was enormous. We were talking about billions of dollars worth of gas promises and market promises of all kind that was looking good to Yanukovych for his people. So he took the decision in a negotiation. I'm the duly elected president. I get two offers. This one is better for my country. He went with this one, which was the Russian offer. And as a response to this, forces inside the country, fomented and funded by American entities and CIA-type services of all kind and sub-companies that are meant to hide the true origins of money, started a revolution in the country, started shooting people with snipers on rooftops in downtown Kiev and Odessa. Sorry for the pronunciation. And Yanukovych was ousted physically from the country and has been replaced with pro-American forces since then, up to Zelensky. That is not a country that wanted to join the EU overwhelmingly. That is a country that had decided democratically that they had a president that was making choices for them. He made a choice, and when the choice went away from American interest, he got offed, he got kicked from the country, and if he had stayed, he would probably be dead. That is the situation of Ukraine.
basically just bought Ukraine's president, Viktor Yanukovych, who abruptly reversed course on EU membership, which sparked the Maidan revolution.
And he says abruptly reversed course. That's what a good negotiator does when he gets a better offer.
Which I call a glorious outburst of Ukrainian nationalism and Russian slander as an American intelligence operation. Meanwhile, Russia launched its own military and intelligence ops in Ukraine, seizing control of Crimea and fomenting separatist movements in the Donbass. Now, 8 years later, Russia has invaded Ukraine with the express aim of regime change and denazification. Ukraine, Russians claim, is a fake country. Ukrainians think they are a different people, but this is false consciousness, and they have to be educated out of this by destroying their language and their national identity. This is a war of imperial conquest, pure and simple.
That's definitely not what Putin wants to do. Precisely, as said recently, still, to my big surprise, we don't want to destroy Ukraine. So the people who are pro-European Union in Ukraine will have their part of Ukraine left, with which they can do whatever they want, including continue to live in Ukraine. They were just getting too violent in oppressing the non-Ukrainians of their country.
Simple, and its frank aim can be defined as cultural genocide. The pretexts about the Donbass and NATO encroachment are transparently cynical, and they're not to be taken seriously.
It's not to be taken seriously that an entire population, an ethnicity in Ukraine, has been denied governmental services, denied governmental support, have been told that they couldn't talk their language publicly, and have been subject to persecution, terrorism, and killings for the last 8 years. That is to be taken as a pretext. More than the number was around 13,000, 14,000 deaths as a result of this oppression. 14,000 deaths to be dismissed as a pretext of Putin. And that's a number by the UN, by the way, which is not known to be particularly pro-Russian.
Believe that distinct peoples deserve their own homelands. If you believe that wars of conquest and cultural genocide are evil things, then of course you should sympathize with Ukraine over Russia. But again, our sympathies are...
What about the war of conquest of Ukraine? The war of conquest of Ukraine toward the Donbass region.
I'm not going to change this war one way or the other. The only reason I comment on this war is to uphold the correct ethno-nationalist principles and show their relevance, because I hope that in the very long run, if we can get enough people of vision and goodwill on our side, ethno-nationalism might create a better world free from the horrors of things like the Ukraine war. But I do, however, want to end this opening statement by making one brief nod to realpolitik, but specifically only with regard to the white nationalist movement itself, because within the movement, I think that my commentary does have the ability to change things. In my view, Vladimir Putin is very, very bad for white nationalism in Russia, in Ukraine, and in the West. After taking power, Putin closed the Soviet archives to revisionist researchers. He criminalized historical revisionism. He passed sweeping anti-hate legislation, which was used to target not just outright national socialists, but milquetoast immigration reformers. Putin also set up a fake nationalist movement, which combined...
So this part of the critique, I often get it whenever I say positive things about Russia. People come to me and say, JF, Russia is a terrible multicultural a country with hate speech laws. Wouldn't you be pissed to be in a country where you can't speak freely? Those are all internal concerns with respect to Russia. They would be taken seriously if I was a citizen of Russia. But that is not what we're making as a point. I don't think it's what Mark Collett is making as a point, that he wants to be a Russian citizen, that Russia is the land of white people. I don't think it's what he's making as a point. What we're making is Russia is its own thing. It has its own internal problems. I wouldn't want to live in Russia. But Russia right now in the geopolitical chess game is on our side. On our side because it's against our governments, and our governments are against us. And there are many points in the Putin speech that address concerns of nationalists of the West, concerns with our own countries that Putin is now exposing. it's a good thing that a force has arisen that is against our government. And I will take it even from an imperfect country with hate speech laws and whatever it is that they have. Because I'm outside Russia. I benefit from any support they could give, even if I disagree with their laws.
Binds the usual raft of conservative cultural values with Russian imperialism, which is a multicultural ideology opposed in principle to all forms of ethnic nationalism. Putin's fake Russian nationalist movement has aggressively courted nationalists in the West. I remember in 2014 when Leonid Savin, one of Dugin's followers, submitted an article on quote-unquote Donbass ethno-nationalism to Countercurrents. I was offended. Did he really think I was that stupid? I also remember a conversation with a Eurasianist who said that...
And here you go. All of the principles that Greg Johnson has laid up, he's telling you, don't ask me to adhere to those principles with respect to the Donbass. I won't. So Greg Johnson is unwilling to take everything he just said against imperialism and for ethno-nationalism. How about you apply it to Donbass? Well, someone actually encouraged him to do so in the past, and he said, do you think I'm stupid? So basically, that is Greg Johnson laying out and trying to slip toward the audience his double standard. He's not going to consider the Donbass as an ethnicity. He's not going to consider the Russian inhabitants of the Donbass as an ethnicity, victim of some oppression, of some imperialism. So of course you're going to end pro-Ukrainian if you think that way. That's because the only people to whom you have said you would apply your principles to is the Ukrainian people. Anything Russian, they don't exist as far as Greg Johnson is concerned.
Suitcases full of Russian and Iranian cash could be conjured up if one gave platforms for their propaganda. I was pretty sure he was delusional. And beyond that, you
and
can't
now
get
Greg
to an ethno-nationalist world.
Greg Johnson is suggesting that people are on the payroll of Russia. Now, you have to ask yourself this at some point in the debating world. Why is it that I end up making the exact same argument as Hillary Clinton? Greg should ask himself this question. Greg Johnson, why do you have the exact same position that Hillary Clinton would have if she tried to oust Tulsi Gabbard from her party, which is she's a Russian agent. I think that the Russians have assets in our parties. That is what Greg is doing here with ethno-nationalism, white nationalism. He's saying some of us are on the payroll of Russia. Show me proof, show me who it is. I won't believe it until I see that.
If you're suddenly willing to shield for Russian imperialism and anti-nationalism, today our movement's only advantages are the truth.
But Russian intervention in Ukraine is not anti-nationalism. It is one nation protecting its own ethnic, the Russian ethnics of Ukraine, against another nation that is trying to imperialistically conquer those places and impose their Ukrainian lifestyles on it. Naberius says Russia doesn't need to be a European paradise to be supported. Exactly. Nighttime Edition says if Greg is throwing these accusations, it's probably because he is being paid by someone. Yeah, why does it come to his mind so quickly?
Truth and the credibility one wins by speaking it. And compromising one's principles and credibility for what exactly is simply self-defeating. But given the behavior of some nationalists in the US and Europe, I suspect they were taken in. Now that's a battle that I can fight and win, which is why Countercurrents has taken a leading role in combating, frankly, the Russian subversion of the white nationalist movement since 2014.
And there you go, Hillary Clinton argument. What is Hillary Clinton doing in the Democrat Party? She is fighting Russian subversion of some of the presidential candidates, like Tulsi Gabbard.
We published a number of articles on white nationalist delusions about Russia, for instance, which have been quite popular. So I just want to end by saying this. As a white nationalist, my worst nightmare would be a Donald Trump dictatorship. Why? Because Trump's committed to a multicultural, multiracial, civic nationalist vision of America. Given that, even if he built a wall, the white race in America would be relentlessly eroded by differential fertility, miscegenation, and...
So here, this is classical Greg Johnson. He outflanks Trump. Oh, well, Trump is a multiculturalist, and he does the same with Putin. Like, Putin is a big multicultural people. But you know who's worse than these two guys, than Putin and Trump? Basically, every other politician that has been heading America for the last few decades. So Trump was the least, was the best of the worst. Trump was the least evil. I think that's what you guys say. The least evil, the lesser evil. That's the term. Trump was the lesser evil. So why would you use him as a comparison? If you want to make a case against autocracy, what I would be scared about is the autocracy of the Democrats, the technocrats, taking over the American government as they have done and imposing their technocracy and their control of speech as they have done in the last few years. That is scary. The Trump autocracy is much less scary than anything we have right now.
Legal immigration. And under a Trump dictatorship, there would be no way to change it. Trump would turn countless potential right-wing dissidents into Klan trusters who would embrace and make excuses for white genocide as long as Trump appealed to their conservative values and authoritarian personalities. Imagine the fate of Kevin McDonald under the dictatorship of the man who pardoned Jonathan Pollard. Imagine the fate of Jared Taylor under the dictatorship of the man who gave us the Platinum Plan. That nightmare is reality under Putin's dictatorship today, and that is the nightmare.
That is a stretch. Under Democrats, there has been severe violations of free speech that have been much worse than anything we've seen under Trump. And we now have evidence that the FBI, the deep state, is collaborating with social media to censor right-wing dissidents. I've not heard of a drive from Donald Trump to censor Kevin McDonald. But I do know that the FBI, headed by Democrats, will do that.
Nightmare he's going to bring to Ukraine, and I say hell no to that.
Okay, so, Mark, your opening statement.
The greatest threat to the existence of people of European descent is Judeo-American Western liberal democracy. Every white nation that falls under the...
There you go. This is the beauty with a brain like Mark Collette, a very intelligent guy, in a single sentence. He has summed up the problem with the argument of Greg Johnson. The biggest threat. Greg Johnson is trying to scratch the bottom of the drawers. Oh, you know, Putin is kind of a multiculturalist. He does kind of have some hate speech laws, you know. The greatest threat to Western white people is their government. If you try to pay attention away from this, to focus on something else, you're already in a red herring. Because the biggest threat is here. That is important. That is absolutely beautifully laid out by Mark Collette. And he reads it as if it was prepared speech, and maybe it was. But then, even better, if it was prepared in advance and already addressing everything that Greg Johnson has said. It's like he took everything that Greg Johnson has said, he put it in a small box, little cube. The biggest threat is here. Brilliant guy, this Mark Collette.
Influence of the American state is subject to three attacks. The first of these attacks targets the ethnic integrity of the people of that nation and is carried out by means of unchecked mass immigration and state-enforced multiculturalism. The second of these attacks is aimed at destroying the moral fabric of the people of that nation and comes in the form of the aggressive promotion of the LGBT agenda, an attack on traditionalism.
There you go. The attack on demographics, the attack on sexual behavior with the hope of reducing demographic trends,
mining of family values, and the mocking and tearing down of Christianity. The third of these attacks
and the mocking of Christianity
is to limit the rights of the people of the nation that is under attack. This is done to limit the ability of those people to resist and organize against attack number one and attack number two.
And then the censorship to those who resist to those two attacks. That is such a, that is a much bigger problem than, Ukraine is a nation and I'm an ethno-nationalist, so I'm for Ukraine.
Two. These attacks on Western nations have been going on since the end of the Second World War and have only intensified since the fall of the Berlin Wall. However, when the Berlin Wall stood, the general consensus was that Russia and the Soviet Union were the bad guys and America and NATO were the good guys. However, those that believe this very simple and highly propagandized assessment of that geopolitical divide could not have been more wrong. Communism was, of course, a brutal and destructive force for people of Europe.
There you go. I've never had a communist from Russia keep my children from being heterosexual. I've never had a communist from Russia push a drag queen show on me. I've never had a communist from Russia take all of the money that I make and claim it as tax.
European descent, and communism subjugated the people under its influence, bringing immense suffering and death to European nations, but it did so visibly and openly. Once the Iron Curtain fell, those nations that had survived for decades under communist tyranny emerged ethnically and morally intact and ready to embrace something better, nationalism. During the Cold War, those European nations that lay on the western side of the Iron Curtain willingly embraced the American state as a friend and happily took on the Judeo-American Western liberal values that the American state offered. The gifts of sexual...
This is beautifully said because it makes me realize that the state of Eastern Europe being less ruined than the state of Western Europe in terms of American penetration of leftism and LGBT activism is basically due to a protective effect of being kind of backward state taken down by communism. So it's something that is very, very fascinating to me to think about as a libertarian who doesn't like communism at all. But what if communism ended up protecting them from American imperialism in a way and cultural domination and imperialism? Isn't that beautiful? And that means there may be situations under which it's better to go communism and you have a more lasting protective layer onto generations. Whereas if you go for liberty and capitalism, eventually you are easier to penetrate for bad ideas.
Liberation, free love, pornography, mass immigration, diversity, tolerance, and of course the mantra of do what makes you feel good were nothing more than a series of poisoned chalices that slowly destroyed the people of each nation that drank from them. Whilst communism collapsed and those in the East were happy to throw off the shackles of their communist oppressors and turn to something better, family, folk.
Yeah, to sum it up, DK Shadow says, can't watch TV if you don't have electricity. Exactly. So if you're so poor that your opponents don't have the means to get to your family, then you are more tightly bound to that family lifestyle.
And faith, those in the West simply begged for more of the poison that the American state fed to them, dancing and cavorting with insane grins on their faces as their nations crumbled around them and their folk were bred out of existence, thanks to the values instilled in them by their greatest ally. And since the collapse of communism and the fall of the Berlin Wall, the flow of the poison that has been corrupting and destroying Western nations has only increased. In fact, since the 1990s, the madness that has been afflicting white people has increased exponentially, both in terms of its volume and the level of its toxicity. This is in large part because the Judeo-American state and NATO have not had a serious global counterbalance for over three decades. However, this is changing. On the 30th of September, Vladimir Putin made the most important speech that any world leader has made since the end of the Second World War. In this speech, he attacked replacement migration, he defended the traditional family, he pushed back against the LGBT agenda, he stood up for Christianity, he rebuked Western nations for their anti-free speech laws, he spoke out against the unjustified wars in the Middle East that Western nations have fought on behalf of Israel, he talked of American war crimes in Japan and Germany at the end of the Second World War, and most importantly, he labeled Western elites as a satanic cabal, and proclaimed that they openly oppress not only people of other nations, but also their own people. The speech...
Absolutely beautiful. Putin is basically a better ethno-nationalist by the standard of actually caring about what's hurting Western demographics right now than Greg Johnson is. Both in terms of his... just the ideology that Mark Collett laid out here. Like 4 or 5 points, I prefer Putin to Greg Johnson there. And then in the private sector, Putin has girlfriends.
Speech is as strong, as well delivered, and as poignant as any speech I have heard from any nationalist leader, elected or otherwise. But this speech was not made by some rabble rouser in the back room of a pub. It was not made by a pseudo intellectual on YouTube. It was not made by an MEP or an MP of a civic nationalist party in Europe. It was made by the leader of a world superpower and a man who leads a country that is an integral part of a bloc of nations that represents the largest counterbalance to Judeo-American Western liberal democracy that we have seen since the fall of the Berlin Wall. But
Exactly. All we need is a balance. All we need is an enemy of America. And it doesn't matter if they're not open enemies and if they're in a Cold War. We have something else to counterbalance the absolute totalitarianism and domination of the left in liberal societies. So that is good to have. It keeps them in check. It gives us a voice that has power behind it that can criticize those nations for what they do to us.
But unlike the Soviet Union, this new counterbalance to Judeo-American Western liberal democracy is using terminology that would be more in line with that used by nationalist powers pre-World War II. This is why the American State Department and America's vassal states in Europe are so desperate to see regime change in Russia. And make no mistake, the conflict in the Ukraine is all about regime change. Whether that regime change comes from ludicrous sanctions, which are likely to kill more Europeans this winter than Russians, or whether that regime change comes from an ever bloodier conflict in Eastern Ukraine.
Boom! In case you're caring about people, white people dying, Greg, probably the most deaths that we will be able to count will be those deaths caused by the economic downturn and the problem of provision of energy for Northern Europe, Northern or Western.
Ukraine, the American state does not care. And the European lives that will be lost are merely collateral damage to those who control America. America has used NATO to repeatedly poke the bear. NATO has aggressively expanded into Eastern Europe, despite repeated reassurances to Russia that it would not do so. Now NATO and America seek to place weapons on Russia's borders, almost mirroring the Cuban Missile Crisis that took place in 1962. This provocation alone...
Absolutely excellent to bring this mirror situation. America was in that situation before. It was the missile crisis of Cuba, and so we know what America does when what's happening to Russia is done to it.
Loan would be enough to anger Russia, but it is not the only provocation that the American state is engaged in. From the CIA-backed color revolution in 2014 to the wholesale slaughter of ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine, America has put in place a new Ukrainian establishment and has encouraged and allowed that establishment to stoke the fires of war, giving Russia very little choice but to draw a line in the sand and then defend that line. And that is a crucial point. The special operation in eastern Ukraine is not an imperial war waged by a resurgent USSR, as NATO and the Western media would like to claim, and any nationalist claiming such things should be ashamed of themselves. It is in fact America and Britain imperialistic foreign wars and interventions that have left millions of people dead in Europe and the Middle East over the last 30 years. It is not Russian foreign policy to invade, bomb, and destabilize nations on behalf of Israel or to launch military operations.
Boom. So much graver than all of the concerned trolling of Greg. It's amazing how Mark Collett succeeds at making his stuff look so much more important, so much bigger, that you feel that the whole intro by Greg was just like a bunch of females chatting in a hair studio or something.
To bring about social change and usher in progressive politics. In fact, in recent memory, it was Russia that saved Serbia from NATO's bombs. It was Russia that destroyed the American-backed ISIS militants in Syria and saved the Christian minority that was protected under that secular Syrian government. It is the American state that has terrorized the world since the fall of the Berlin Wall, not Russia. And make no mistake, this war too was started by America and its puppet government, the Ukrainian establishment. But that Ukrainian establishment, the one that I just mentioned, well, it's not actually Ukrainian. It is the most Jewish government in Europe. The four men in charge of the Ukraine are Zelensky, the president, Shymel, the prime minister, Reznikov, the defense minister, and Yermak, the chief of staff. All of them are Jewish, which is something mirrored within the American State Department, where the three people in charge of America's vehemently anti-Russian agenda are, you guessed it, all Jewish. Anthony Blinken, Wendy Sherman, and Victoria Nuland. And sadly, there are nationalists supporting these people and their war, a war that is killing tens of thousands of white men. And if America and its Jewish puppet government is...
Absolutely. The reason the U.S. is so sympathetic to Ukraine is that there's a bunch of Jewish people with Jewish interests in Ukraine, Jewish people in the American government, and they're helping each other. That's how this gets established. It is basically a network of executive takeover of the American government, where the American government puts a candidate like Joe Biden, who is not Jewish, but then behind Joe Biden, the whole deep state gets controlled by pro-Israeli interests. So Joe Biden is just a cardboard politician in front of this network of support for the Israeli causes. And someone on Gab was speculating, and I found this extremely interesting a couple of days ago. And I was told that I should have cared about this story way before, because apparently it's been talked about for months. But I found the hypothesis extremely interesting, that basically Israeli interests are trying to establish a new Israel in Ukraine, and that this will be the final outcome of this war. And basically the reason the US is pushing for territorial counteroffensives that take back from Russia is that they don't want this new Israel in Ukraine to be limited and small and not have access to sea. They want an extended territory. And the smaller the Ukraine gets right now, the smaller the new Israel gets. It's very interesting because what is happening in Ukraine is emptying Ukraine of its male population. And this will leave place to a massive immigration movement after the dust has settled. There will be basically a country with beautiful women, with dead husbands and dead men. And it will be a perfect situation for a mass immigration movement to pour in. Is it because perhaps Israel finds its own place untenable long term, knowing that they are getting swamped by, you know, by all sides, by Muslim countries? Or do they intend to keep Israel, but to have this kind of Ukraine backup? John Drake says, absolutely, the Greater Israel Project on steroids. I mean, it all makes sense. I mean, I saw this hypothesis and I was like, okay, that's what's happening. And I was thinking, did I cause this? Because I know that I had a couple of Jewish viewers back in 2016 and 17, and a lot of people were asking me, JF, where are the beautiful women? And I remember Googling, you know, Ukrainian woman and showing on screen, you know, this looks like very beautiful. And I'm wondering if I've caused the whole Ukraine war, because maybe one Jewish person in my audience could have then decided by looking at my Google search, all right, Ukraine will be our next Israel. It's our next promised land. I know it's a little bit fantasist in terms of a hypothesis, but I'm worried. Oh, We Are the West says, yeah, that's where Frame Games went. Frame Games is just following what I told him, trying to eliminate the male population of Ukraine so you can get infinite Ukrainian women. That is, I'd be happy for Frame Games. I'd be happy for Frame Games.
In the Ukraine succeed, if the Ukrainian forces emerge victorious, what brave new world would they usher in for Ukrainian people? Pride parades in the streets, transgender lessons in school, drag queen story hour in local libraries, gay adoption, hundreds of thousands of African migrants per year flooding into the Ukraine. To let Judeo-American Western liberal democratic values win in the Ukraine is to destroy the Ukrainian people, not by conventional means of warfare, but by a slow mental and moral poisoning, the same poisoning that has destroyed Britain, America, and other Western nations.
Exactly. I mean, they are currently at war, and we're already into porn legalization in Ukraine. I mean, this tells you the priorities of this movement. It's like, yeah, we're not going to keep helping you if you don't let us subvert your youth. It's like, you are at war in an existential conflict, and because of flows of money, you are influenced to make special laws allowing porn all of a sudden. In a country where porn was illegal forever, this tells you that that the program for Ukraine is as civilizationally destructive as it has been on our own nation.
Vladimir Putin may not be perfect, and indeed he is not an ethno-nationalist. However, he did not start this war, nor is he the one pumping LGBT propaganda into our schools or endorsing swamping levels of mass immigration into the West. In fact, he presents a powerful counterbalance against those who do such things in Western nations. And if Russia was to fall, that would place all the power in the hands of the American state. And we know what that would lead to. I do not want to see any more bloodshed in the Ukraine, but I am not going to stand behind the Judeo-American state, nor am I going to stand behind the most Jewish regime in Europe. I believe in self-determination for all European people, including those in the Ukraine. But that self-determination does not come from allying with America. And if history has taught us anything, it is that falling under American influence is the most dangerous thing a European nation can do. But I'll leave.
Boom. Even if you were to make a principled argument around self-determination, cucking to the US is not self-determination. It's the antithesis. The US will make it so that once it got its grasp over your country, whatever direction you try to take that's against their interest, they will steer you back in the way they did it in 2014.
I'll leave you with a quote, as Henry Kissinger summed it up best. To be an enemy of America can be dangerous, but to be a friend is fatal.
Okay.
Wow. Powerful. That may be one of the most beautiful debate intro I've seen in my life. And I've been through the blood sports era. I've been a co-host of it. This guy is quite the talent. Mark Collett, I'll be going on his show. Let me tell you the date. It's on the 26th, Mark Collett appearance. My God, this is some of the most beautiful, well laid out, super clear, straight to the point intro. He makes it fit YouTube rules somehow. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, this is what I was trying to put forward as talent back in the days of the blood sports. I mean, that's why I was hosting debate. I wanted that kind of brain to be able to express itself beautifully.
So I'm going to go start with the questions so that we can kind of move this along. So first question is to both of you, and obviously, Greg, you can go first. Was Russia justified in invading Ukraine? Yes or no, and why? And secondarily, what responsibility does NATO have in creating the Ukraine crisis?
No, Russia's invasion is not justified. It's pure imperialism. I would say naked.
But what invasion is justified anyway? An invasion comes at an imperfect moment where, well, in this case, the invasion comes at an imperfect moment where all attempts were done to not invade. There were the Minsk agreements. They didn't work. It's like Putin was almost too weak in all this negotiation. Putin assumed that somehow the other side would end up respecting Russian ethnics in Ukraine. He gave them the chance with the Minsk agreement, but there was no sovereignty. They didn't respect the votes of sovereignty for the southeastern part of Ukraine. They didn't allow them to run these votes. And when they ended up running them themselves, they claimed that the votes weren't good. So basically, it's like you are committed to letting this part of Ukraine vote for its sovereignty, but then you deny any attempt at trying to get a vote going, and then you mock the results of the vote when they don't fit your expectations. And they continued being oppressed, and they continued being killed for the last 8 years. So Putin has given an option out of an invasion. It was the option of respecting the Minsk agreements. They weren't respected. So he gave it about 8 years. He left them 8 years to respect their own agreement. After 8 years, he had to invade because it wasn't getting done.
Imperialism, were it not for the tiny fig leaf of the genocide, as they call it, in Donbass and NATO encroachment.
Oh, there's a tiny genocide. What genocide is tiny, Greg Johnson? Like, this invasion is absolutely unjustified, except that there's a tiny genocide, and this gives a tiny justification. What? If you have to end up with the phrase tiny genocide in your argument is bad. A tiny fig leaf of a genocide.
I do think the U.S. is stringing along Zelensky with the possibility of NATO membership to bait Putin into this war. I think the U.S. had a very clear idea of how corrupt and weak the Putin regime and the Russian military proved to be. I think they believe that a defeat for Putin could bring about regime change. I think Putin was a fool to start this war, but baited or not, he was the one who started it. And on a deeper level, although NATO has, on a deeper level, though, I don't think NATO has any real responsibility for this war for this simple reason. The Ukraine joining NATO was a disposable pretext. If NATO had given Zelensky a hard no, Putin would have invented another pretext because I think he was hell-bent on seizing Ukraine and thought it would.
NATO caused this war, among other things, by pushing for the ousting of Yanukovych, by pushing Ukraine into a revolution that advantaged it with respect to Russia. That's how NATO caused this war, by having the principles of politics in this country violated by revolutionary forces.
It would be easy. There's a lot of disinformation about NATO out there. NATO made no promises to Gorbachev not to expand east. They did promise not to put nukes in East Germany, a promise they kept. NATO expanded to the east because the countries there had legitimate security concerns vis-a-vis Russia. Unlike the Russian Empire or the Soviet...
Imagine thinking that you've been promised that there would be no nuclear missiles in Eastern Germany, but that there would be eventually lab of bio research for dangerous pathogens in Ukraine. Wouldn't that be a violation of the spirit of the promise? So, oh, we won't have nuclear missiles east of Germany. Oh, but here we are a couple of kilometers away from your Russian border, and we're going to develop bioweapons. Sorry, it's not East Germany, and sorry, it's not a nuclear weapon.
Bloc, NATO did not expand by conquest. NATO is a defensive alliance that countries asked to join. Nor did NATO rebuff Russia. Putin asked why Russia was not invited into NATO. Then he was told that countries apply to join and the members vote.
It's a tiny bioweapon, says Nighttime Edition. It's a tiny fig leaf bioweapon for exclusively tiny genocide.
Vote on it. Putin said that Russia would not wait in line behind insignificant countries, and that was the end of it. Putin's attitude, of course, is pure Russian chauvinism. Under international law, all sovereign states are equal, hence equal treatment by NATO. Putin, however, thinks that you're only as sovereign as you are powerful. He doesn't fundamentally respect the sovereignty of smaller, weaker nations.
Well, that is also a good description of the U.S. What is true of the current behavior of Putin is that Putin acts as if entitled to the same tools that the U.S. has been using again and again, using their own justification. Putin is saying, all right, since the U.S. has been intervening in foreign countries on the basis of its security interest, we can intervene in foreign countries on the basis of our security interest.
Which is why Russia's former satellites wanted into NATO in the first place. Nor does NATO threaten Russia. NATO is a defensive alliance. It would not go to war with Russia unless Russia attacked one of its...
NATO threatens Russian sovereignty, as we have seen. They get into a conflict. They favor friction, revolution within countries. They then blow up your pipelines if they don't like the commerce you engage in. NATO countries are an absolute threat to Russia. And that threat is being enacted out as we speak. Russia cannot send gas to Germany because of NATO.
Its members. Beyond that, Russia has an enormous nuclear deterrent. Nobody is going to start a war with Russia because of that. The idea that Russia cannot live behind its 2013 borders is nutty, yet we're told that this is an existential conflict. But the only thing existentially threatened by staying within its borders is Russia's imperialist mentality. NATO was built to contain Soviet...
Well, Russia has been engaging in free commerce, and America blew their pipeline. So who has the imperialist mentality here? Russia, who says, hey, it would be good to have trade with this free country called Germany. Or US, who says, no, you forgot to ask us, we don't consent.
Soviet imperialism. When the USSR was dissolved, it looked like NATO was obsolete, but that impression turns out to have been wrong. Russia's post-communist regime mourned the loss of their empire and immediately set to work subverting the newly independent nations, which is why 15 of them applied to join NATO. The only reason Ukraine was invaded is because it was not in NATO and did not enjoy its protection. This is why Sweden and Finland have now joined NATO, and Armenia and Georgia should probably join as well. Putin's war has strengthened NATO enormously, which was a totally predictable consequence that he apparently didn't take into account. So I think that No, this is not justified, and NATO is not responsible for this. It's all on Putin.
Okay, so Mark, just to restate the question, or do you remember?
No, can you restate?
Yeah, I'll restate it. So first of all, was Russia justified in invading? And second of all, what responsibility does NATO have in your...
Yes, Spindly Opinion says, I think it's possible Europe could switch quickly from woke to right wing. Maybe a cold winter and petrol shortages would do it. Absolutely. I can't wait to see what happens, because there may be a solution that the Western countries find, which makes the shortage tolerable for the population. But something tells me you could have a massive change of political positioning as the shortage hits strong this winter. I can't wait to see what happens this winter, because most of the time I think nothing's going to happen. But it looks like we may have attained the maximum of what people are capable to pay to survive. And there's going to be a lot of people pissed and frozen. And I can't wait to see what will happen. Dino Logovic predicts a shortage of blue hair dye. Maybe it will happen. As people were pointing out, there's this new movement of Just Stop the Oil. And it's a bunch of teenagers who are going with a shirt and they mark on the shirt with black oil, basically. They mark with black oil, Just Stop Oil. And someone was pointing on Gab, there's the Just Stop Oil starter kit, a t-shirt made with oil, written Just Stop Oil on it, made with oil, a iPhone made with oil, and a bunch of shoes made with oil. It's amazing. We depend on oil so much.
Your estimation for the crisis?
How long do I have?
5 minutes.
Russia was absolutely justified. You see, Greg keeps talking about the idea of ethnostates, but he's being very disingenuous here. And I want to say something else. I feel it's rather disingenuous of Greg to imply that certain people on the right are paid by the Kremlin, which certain...
Boom. It's disingenuous. He didn't bring evidence for it. So you're just trying to see that the same way Hillary Clinton was doing, without evidence. It's like, the Russian agents are out there. Be careful, they live among us. Beautiful rebuke by Mark Collette, and it's all you have to say, because there's no evidence to debunk. It's just his claim.
Countercurrent writers have done. I think that's very unfair, and I think that's unjust to start saying things like that. The fact is, the Ukraine as a nation didn't exist till 1918, and since its existence, or since it came into existence, its borders have been redrawn numerous times, and numerous different ethnic groups live there. There are ethnic Russians, part of Poland was absorbed into the Ukraine. It's very much a nation that would be analogous with somewhere like the former Yugoslavia. As such, the different people who live in the Ukraine and the numerous redrawing of its borders means that those people also have their ethnic determination. And there are many ethnic Russians, many Russian speakers, and many people within the Ukrainian sphere, such as in the Crimea, which is now part of Russia, that were always Russian, that have been Russian for centuries. Now, in 2019, when Zelensky was elected, he was actually elected on a platform of peace with Moscow, closer ties with Russia, and he was elected on a platform that looked as if peace was going to be the route that he would take. He did not then pursue peace. He did the absolute opposite of that. He dismantled parts of the media that were pro-Russian. He banned different political movements that were pro-Russian. And he ran in the very opposite direction to...
Exactly. I mean, if you want to talk dictatorship and say Putin is a dictator, therefore, and he has hate speech laws, therefore, let's take the side of Ukraine. I'm sorry, but Ukraine went full martial law and full genocide against its male population. That is something much graver. And there's much more control of speech, and basically the other side of politics doesn't exist anymore in Ukraine. It's been legally banned.
To the direction voters voted for him to go in. This was a Fed op. This was an American state op, just like the 2014 revolution, the Maidan Revolution. People say, well, that was an expression of the Ukrainian people. Well, if that was an expression of the Ukrainian people, it is very interesting how Jewish the Ukrainian establishment has turned out to be, because that is not representative of either the Ukrainians in the Ukraine.
Absolutely interesting that the Ukrainian people just suddenly find itself with a love story with Jewish technocracy. We love it suddenly in 2014. And to establish this technocracy, we're going to do it with snipers in downtown Kiev.
Ukraine, or the ethnic Cossacks, the Tatars, or the ethnic Russians who live on the eastern border. Now, the fact is, what we are seeing here in terms of NATO trying to move into the Ukraine, weapons being placed in the Ukraine, is analogous to the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. Greg says, well, no one would ever start a hot war with Russia because Russia has nuclear missiles. How did America react when nuclear missiles or Russian weapons were placed on America's borders? They issued an ultimatum, but the USSR were good enough to back down and remove their weapons. America has not done the same because the Jewish American State Department wanted to provoke this conflict. That's why Minsk and Minsk II were both violated, with thousands of ethnic Russians being slaughtered by people LARPing as National Socialists under the Azov banner. And again,
boom. Even your Azov neo-Nazis are just LARPers. And yes, that is true. Because it's one of these cases where the neo-Nazi aesthetics pleases the American Jewish technocracy. And it's one of the rare instances where you don't see them being canceled. In fact, to the contrary, the Mark Zuckerbergs of this world have made special rules to say, all right, you cannot praise neo-Nazis on Facebook, but the neo-Nazis of Ukraine are different, bro. You can praise them, but only if you praise them as in the context of Ukraine. So basically, you have a neo-Nazi-looking, National Socialist-looking aesthetic display, but that can only serve Ukrainian, warmongering, Jewish-American interests. Isn't that fascinating? It is the final disguise, the disguise yourself as your enemy and then do exactly the contrary of what the people you are disguising as would do.
This shows just how strange the American State Department is. It will use people LARPing as National Socialists if they get the job done, which is provoking Putin. But even when Putin did mount this special operation, when he moved into eastern Ukraine, he only moved in with 190,000 troops. It was not a war of extermination. It was nothing like the American war in Iraq or Afghanistan. In fact, very little damage has been done outside of the eastern parts of the Ukraine. Putin has made it clear he is actually giving self-determination and protection to ethnic Russians, and he has been goaded time and time again by the American State Department, the CIA, and groups that want to bring about regime change in Russia. And the reason they want to bring about regime change in Russia is because they do not want any strong counterbalance to Judeo-American Western liberal democracy. But without that counterbalance, everybody in the West is more at risk from an America that has no rivals.
Listen, I'm going to cut it here as far as the review goes. In conclusion, Mark Collett wins absolutely here. The concern trolling by Greg Johnson and the principles had to be laid out in such a double standard way. It's like any of the point that he's make, you can just revert them by asking yourself, okay, ethno-nationalism good, okay, hate speech bad, okay. But what about Ukraine? What about what Ukraine has done? What about what they've done to the Donbass? And if you are for the self-determination of the people, why don't you respect the self-determination vote of the Donbass people who have voted, some of them back years ago, for sovereignty from Ukraine, only to get told, well, your vote don't count because it didn't reach the right conclusion. So therefore, you are threatened by Russia. You are voting with a gun on your head. That is always what these regimes are doing. When they don't get it the way they expected, they end up saying, well, the vote was invalid. But make a valid vote. Until you make a valid vote, I will trust the vote that happened. Some random bloke sends a super chat. He says, Ron Hoons has some good articles on the relationships between Nazis and Zionists. Yeah, I've seen some of those back in the days, like a year ago around the start of the Ukraine conflict or whenever that was. Yes, I've seen those. Cloud Warmer says, all you need to do is read up on the Morgenthau Plan. Under no circumstances can Russia and Germany be friends. Germany must be deindustrialized. Yeah, I've read it, and I brought it up on the show recently. I didn't know about this plan. It's a plan that was meant to be a peace deal after World War II, and it was basically crushing Germany economically and keeping its industrial force low. And it turned out that it wasn't adopted officially. But what we see basically, as people were pointing out on Gab, what we're seeing right now is a development of the Morgenthau plan, even if it hasn't been signed. It's like the development of the Morgenthau plan through bombing of pipelines and creating instability to shake Germany up and make Germany incapable of continuing its industrial development, which Germany is just, apparently Germany is just too strong. So if you give them Russian oil, they're just more efficient than any nations at just churning out products. And that is annoying to the leaders of this world, the people who control this world, who somehow prefer that China be that force of production of crap. I guess the problem with Germany is that it doesn't just produce crap. Some random bloke says the ADL also said that Ukrainian neo-Nazis weren't so bad. I'm not surprised. I mean, back in the days, we were just laughing. Seeing Facebook make an exception to their neo-Nazi rules, that was... I cannot believe that this was the news. After years and years of going after neo-Nazis, and it's the biggest threat to America. It's the biggest threat to America, but we're going to allow it today because we need these guys. A couple of review of the news just before we close the show very quick. Election software CEO surrenders to LA authorities. Prosecutors allege massive data breach. So we've talked about it on the show before, but they're now covering it at Zero Hedge. Eugene Yu, who heads Konec, apparently has done some... he had some contracts. He dealt information out that he shouldn't have dealt. In any case, it's going to... it's going to go bad for him. He's being prosecuted. Unreleased footage of Roger Stone exposed during the January 6th commission, calling Ivanka Trump his abortionist bitch daughter.
Very quickly. He has 100 security guards. I'll have 5,000 security guards. You want to fight? Let's fight. Fuck you. Fuck you and your abortionist.
He's talking about Jared Kushner, I believe.
Bitch daughter.
Abortionist bitch daughter. Roger Stone, we have to be careful with him. I think he's becoming... I think he has brain damage. I'm just going to say it. I think it doesn't look like a true deployment of dementia. Because dementia, you get hit much harder and you lose a lot of energy and you become very, very affected by it. Roger Stone is something else. He looks like he has focal brain damage to some area here. The way I saw him speak, he makes some bizarre gesture as he speaks, extremely aggressive and I hate you. And sometimes he has... So I don't see what else could explain this than prefrontal cortex brain damage. It's not a reason to discriminate or hate him, but let's be careful with him. I mean, at this point, he's throwing half intelligent sentence, half insults, and the intelligent sentences are getting rarer and rarer. DK Shadow says maybe it's just low blood sugar. Well, low blood sugar doesn't cause this. This looks to me like prefrontal cortex damage. Very focal, very... I think he's got a secret AVC that wasn't medically detected. I'm gonna just say it. I mean, I'm doing it just based on his behavior, so I could be wrong. It's just a call, okay? I believe that a blood vessel popped into the brain of Roger Stone, that he currently has an accretion necrotic part of his brain, probably big like this, approximately a 10 cent size. I recommend that he does an MRI and assess the damage. In groundbreaking speech, Xi vows to guide China to incomparable glory, an alternative to the U.S. Flanked by party leaders past and future, President Xi Jinping on Sunday took center stage to present his grand vision for China. He says he's bringing the country toward incomparable glory. Okay, good luck. He's trying to push the idea of having a third renewal of his presidency. I don't know if that will work. I don't know if there are hungry people who want to take over, but apparently he's the centrist in China. Med students indoctrinated with bizarre oath to wokeism.
Inequities built by past and present traumas rooted in white supremacy, colonialism.
This is the next generation of people you'll have to go beg your medication to. And they're talking about in their oath, they have them read this oath of past and present injustices developed by white patriarchal supremacy. Holy shit, it's gonna get hard to get a good brain surgery. What university, you say? Med students, you're gonna have to check it for yourself. I don't have time to check it, but the links are always in the description. All links that I use during the show, you can go check it out. Very few people are getting the COVID boosters, despite White House pleas. So the population has understood, okay. These people are making so much money with these vaccines, they want to sell it to you again and again and again and again. So at some point, you have to say stop. If you don't say stop, they're going to keep giving it to you for free, and the American government is going to keep paying the pharmaceuticals who will get rich with just your decision to get the vaccine. So if you want to stop this cycle of exploitation, you have to say no. Tourists shocked as number of homeless encampments explodes in DC. You don't say. This is what annihilation looks like. Biden export controls wreaking havoc on China's chip industry. So Biden is barring Chinese chips because he's afraid that there would be some secret maybe takeover of the chips, I guess. So all chips have to be approved to be clean of potential monitoring by Chinese government. So that results in a complete abolishment of Chinese commercial access to the US for CPUs. And Obama, as a last news item, criticizes the Democrats as buzzkills who make people walk on eggshells. Every time before an election, Obama always reminds the Democrats, don't be too woke. You need to do like me. Just talk about hope. Don't even specify what it is, because you're making people scared with this whole LGBT activism. Dead Star says, my grandfather thinks that he wasn't boosted. He felt no pain and saw no spot on his arm. What are the chances they would do that? You can have missed injections, errors by the pharmacist who, I don't know, drags air or drags some saline. And you can have errors and variations in how a batch is potted into the little glass thing. Such that, yes, it's possible that he was injected with saline or, you know, half a dozen reasons can happen that you don't really get the dose. And the dose can also lodge itself in a pocket of your body because they aim for an injection in the muscle, in which case there are cells. But you know how complex the body is, and if you've been eating steak, you know that there are some membranes sometimes in muscle. Up there's a membrane here and a membrane above, and sometimes these membranes are pretty chewy and pretty they won't let water pass. So imagine that the pharmacist or the nurse injects you, and it gets stuck in a little spot of a membrane like this, where there's no cell, there's just interstitial tissue. Maybe it gets diluted in some lymphatic whatever. There's all sorts of ways in which the dose doesn't come to be effective. So it's very possible that your grandfather didn't get his booster correctly. But there's no way to know, and they're probably not going to give him another dose just to be sure, because that would be more dangerous, I think. Barnabé Buto says, a good friend of mine got his fourth dose last week. Despite his kids, double vaxxed, caught COVID the same week, and now his wife also caught COVID this weekend, but it works. Well, okay. I mean, your friend is the one who will have to live with the consequence, but I don't see why you would want to get into 4, 5, 6 doses. At some point, I mean, even if the chances of myocarditis are said to be rare, at some point, if you get a million booster, you have a million more chances to get it. There's a point at which you're sure you're going to get myocarditis. All right. Bye-bye, everyone. Going to sleep. I'll be on Marc Collet next week on the 26th. I'm very glad to see there was lots of audience today. I guess it's because some of you are joining us for the first time because you didn't know I was still live, and you've seen my thumbnail about Marc Collet, and it attracted you here. I'm glad to see you all. Subscribe to the channel. Join the Patreon, the Subscribestar, to support the show. Keep it going. I'm doing exclusive Odyssey because I want to bring the human population toward Odyssey, because I think it's the next best thing. I think it's going to beat YouTube because we have freedom of speech here. So join the Patreon and Subscribestar also before Tuesday, because Tuesday will be our Patreon hangout at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right after the regular show, or just a little bit after. And it will be for those people who are at the $20 level on Patreon or Subscribestar. Much love, sleep well. Cloudwarmer says, Jeff, your show link is not working yet. It only starts working when the show ends, not at the beginning, because I have to generate it. All right, bye-bye, much love, and see you all tomorrow.